0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. And we're hearing that Boyzone star Keith Duffy has said he doesn't socialise in Dublin anymore due to the negative publicity both he and fellow Boys Life singer Brian McFadden receive there. Now, Boys Life is, of course, the supergroup that Keith Duffy and Brian McFadden, ex of Westlife, have put together. And they tour all over the world, but they tell us they won't play here because of all the negativity. They say it really is just begrudging. People don't listen and they insult. This is what Keith is saying. He says, I rarely socialise in Dublin because when I go out, you don't know if somebody is going to buy you a pint or give you a dig. James Kilbane, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Katie. How are you? It's my first time speaking to you, so nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you, James. Are you all the way over there in Achill Island?
No, I'm not. I'm on the move at the moment. I'm travelling, so I just pulled in. Brenda gave me a call and to see what my opinion was. So here I'm with you.
And tell me, and people will remember you, of course, James, from the Eurostar, but back in the days, the Eurostar final, you came, you were the runner-up, I think, at that time. And they know your gospel music. Yeah, you've a country gospel career all around the country, and people will know you from that.
And elsewhere.
Indeed. So, what do you make about what Keith Duffy was saying there? Were you surprised?
It's a little bit even what you said, because Brenda asked me, what did I think? And I actually seen it coming up on RSVP on my feed there this morning. So, it pitched me back to have a look after she contacted me. Look, it's something that I didn't take from it what you said, that he had an issue with performing in Ireland. It's the socialising side of it. And you know something, I think most artists around the country, if they develop any element of a profile, have walked in his shoes at some stage or other. I get it from the point of view. I would sometimes termed it begrudgery. The term I might use sometimes is small-mindedness. You'd have, like, Ireland is a wonderful place. Absolutely. And it'd be somewhat different if I didn't have a, down through the years, to get to know Keith and his lovely wife, Lisa, because on occasion, and they're fantastic people. And I know Keith has done so much for so many different charities down through the year, because he's had personal experiences of different things in his own life and as a family. So let's get that. They're great people. But I do identify, look, if you go in for a coffee and somebody turns around and says, you know, we got your concert, we had a wonderful time, do you mind taking a selfie? That's lovely, and that does happen. Then you've got the other side of it, that you might be going into a bar and it's a bit on the noisy side, and some people might be a bit over the top with the amount of alcohol they've on board. And sometimes insults can somewhat drag into maybe a situation, and that's not nice. And that is also part of the reality. It's part of, I guess, if you're going to be in a public space, it can happen. But thankfully, and I would safely say, it's more the first rather, in my experience, than the latter of the point. But it is a consideration. And I get the point in relation to the begrudgery. I would say the small-minded. I think sometimes we're great in Ireland when everything's going swift and it's going great and we're all feeling happy. However, in the music industry, you're going to have, there's been super, they're having great success. It might not be at home, and I can relate to this. They're having great success outside of their own nation. Within their own nation, Katie, it's not the same. But they did, and they gave us hours and hours of great music. They gave us, we really enjoyed down through the years. And I bet you there wouldn't be a month that you wouldn't hear a Boyzone song at some stage or other down through the years on a radio. And people do still connect. However, and I come from a very rural community, it's a wonderful place to live. However, there are certain times that you kind of have to step above it or just suck it in and just not to react and just let that negativity of the begrudgery or the small-mindedness it's not nice. And really, in a sense, as Irish people, we shouldn't. We should celebrate and accept then sometimes when things do kind of maybe go into a calmer period of time. But then again, there'll always be twists and turns around where good times will come again. I'll be honest with you, Katie, they're not having bad times. They're having great times. If they're going still around the world and they're still representing our country. They're still great Irish artists, himself and Brian.
Yeah, he was just pointing out in this that himself and Brian are just back from Cape Town. They're on their way to Indonesia, to Bali, and then Vietnam and Cambodia, then Bahrain, Dubai, Abu Dhabi. But he says they do nothing in Dublin. And it's not me, it's actually Keith who uses the term begrudging. He said it really is just begrudging.
Oh, it's in the article, it's there. And I would use the word small-minded.
Yeah, but
You're in RT. You're in RT. There, I'm sure there's politics. There's to and fro, and there's jockeying going on between careers and people's. Look, it's part. In a sense, it's kind of there's an element of it that's part of business, but then there's an element of it within communities, and there's a bit of a psyche thing. We used to call it. I grew up when I was growing up in Achill. My father was a fisherman, and there'd be the story of the how do you keep a lobster pot in the pot. You put other lobster pots in the pot with the lobster, because if that lobster pot starts crawling out, the other lobster pots will pull it back in again. They'll pull people down.
And is that an Irish thing, do you think, James?
I don't know. I've travelled a lot in America, and I've done things in England. I've travelled to different parts of the United States, and like that, people just think of Chicago or New York, and they might think of the Irish community, but we have a vast Irish community. People that went from the north of Ireland, and people went after the famine then from the southern parts of Ireland. I would find there'd be a certain element of that old Irishness. It's probably part of our... You're getting above your station now. Like, hey, I'm James Kilbane. I had a Jordan when I was in various different things. Why are you doing X, Y, and a Z? And if you're not working with certain people in certain parts of the industry, you'll be sidelined, and there'll be a bit of begrudgery because you didn't work with us.
Is there a touch, though? And I mean, I take on board. I mean, obviously, Keith Duffy in particular has done massive work for charity, for children with
Absolutely.
Autism.
They're
amazing campaigning. And
they don't deserve that, Katie. They don't deserve begrudgery.
I think generally people, anyone who has met Keith Duffy will testify that he's an exceptionally impressive man. But, you know, he has a line in this. People assume it's going to be, this is his new, this new act he does, this new show he does, Boy's Life with Brian McFadden. He said, people assume it's going to be SHITE because they don't like us from the days of the 90s. But is there not an element that he expects that he's annoyed that people don't appreciate the music more? And surely people are entitled to not appreciate your music. Is that not a fan's prerogative?
Okay. There's a certain, you could say, demographic of the people, age profile, families. Once upon a time, they were teenagers. Now they're people with children. There's different scenarios in that. But there's also a lot of entertainment going on around the country. But a lot of that entertainment is because there's a certain core group of individuals who run those various things. They might have inputs then as well into radio stations all around the country, where you've got people who might be involved in acts in the radio stations, and they're organising the different events. So there's some artists in the music industry in Ireland that might be perceived to be quite busy. Now, there's others in that element of the industry. It's the most one, I'd say, is the country music scene, that there are some acts that are still finding it quite tough. I am going to be staging events in September, October time. It's going to be lean between now and then because the confidence isn't there. And if you're not in certain circles of people, you're kind of out on the sideline. So sometimes, even if you have great successes in the past, sometimes, and we're coming off of COVID, and the cost of living is going up, but that's a reality. People don't have the money in their pockets. So they're going to be a bit more choosy on how they spend it. And that just actually is a reality of it. You take, for instance, the great Johnny Logan had great success for Ireland, but yet his live shows out throughout the country and in that period of time was lean. He wasn't in the loop. There is a loop.
Is there a thing though? But James, surely to God there are some acts that it's cool to say you are into, and there are some acts that might be a guilty pleasure perhaps for some people.
Okay.
Is that not just the way of the world? And maybe Boyzone would not ever have been the coolest of bands to be following.
Hold on a second now. They've had number ones all around the world. If you were into Def Leppard, maybe at the time, you weren't into Boyzone. But then again, there's some of us that appreciate music, whether it's heavy rock or whether it's classic rock or Boyzone or Westlife or whatever. You appreciate a certain amount. But we are in where we are at the moment. But
do you know what? James, I think your line... Sorry, James, I don't know if you can hear me there. Your line is after going very badly wrong on us there. I think, will we take a break and see if we can get James on a better line? Oh, no, I have. No, do you know what? I have Sinead.
I'm here.
James, stay there. We'll sort out your line if we can. I want to bring in Sinead O'Carroll. Sinead, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm delighted to talk to you, Sinead.
You're more than welcome.
I'm going to start humming your song now.
Good. But it's raining, so...
Yes. Of course, everyone will remember you, Sinead, from Bewitched. Are you still performing? Are you out there?
Yeah, we are, actually. Yeah, we were up until everything got shut down, and then we were back out last July. So, yes. We're gigging away.
Excellent. And when you see Keith Duffy saying this, do you relate to that?
Do you know what? It's kind of a funny situation. I think the Irish music scene and the English music scene, it's very different. I mean, we gig an awful lot in England and Australia and Dubai and stuff like that. And we don't really gig in Ireland. But I just think there's a massive pop culture in the UK that really kind of love this sort of music. I think in Ireland, we're a little bit cooler.
Yeah.
And I do have memories years ago, I suppose, when Sail of E came out. It's just like people either loved it or hated. They kind of thought it was really cheesy. And I do remember the boys getting a bit of stick, you know, back in the day and stuff like that. So there wasn't, much acceptance. And they were the first band, I suppose, pop band to kind of come out of Ireland.
They were so huge. Like, I was reminding myself, yes. 6 UK number ones, 16 yes. out of 17 of their first single releases made the top 5. I mean, they were yes. massive.
I know. Like, they were massive. But I just don't think Ireland embraced the whole, okay, we've got like a boy band pop thing. We're normally kind of, you know, singer-songwriters. We've got U2. We've got like, you know, really cool bands. And I just think maybe that stuck a little bit, because I suppose when they do their sellout shows, the Irish ones, they're the ones that are the most difficult to sell. They're probably the last ones that they sell. And I remember talking to Ronan years ago when he went out and did stuff by himself. The UK one sold out in a flash, but like the Dublin one was a bit of a hard slog. So I don't know. I just think it's a mixture of accepting that this is the music that, you know, they're doing, and then the culture, I suppose.
Do you think it's different down the country from Dublin? Do you think there's...
Yes, I do, because I grew up in Newbridge and Kildare, and when our success had kind of kicked off, the support that I got from my community was phenomenal. Like, they were so supportive. I remember there was busloads and busloads going to the Point Depot for tickets to, you know, come and see the gigs and stuff. But I do remember Del and Keevy having a completely different experience. There was people like, who do you think you are? And do you know what I mean? They got a bit of slack. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just had a completely different experience. So I think, yeah, it's just different.
What is that about, Sinead, though? What do you put that down to?
I suppose, you know, is it jealousy? Is it like, do they think they're great doing this? You know, I suppose a little bit of maybe begrudgery, I don't know. But then I had the complete opposite, you know, just like 30 miles down the road. So
yeah.
It's hard to know. And Lindy didn't fall into any of that category because she grew up in Greece. So she didn't have much of a family kind of community here in Ireland when it happened. So you just literally had Idel and Keevy's perspective, and they were from, they grew up in Donegal, and then I suppose I was down in Kildare, so we were having these parallel experiences.
Yeah, and Has it changed over the years? I mean, have you a sense that, as you say, you don't have you played here? When was the last time like you had a big gig here?
Oh, we did Electric Picnic in the Throwback Tent about 2 years ago, and I have to say that was amazing. I mean, considering that, like, we're not a cool band, we're now retro, so.
I think you are cool again. I do think now.
I think we're cooler now than we were years ago.
I think you might be right. I think there's a nostalgia,
yes,
whole vibe around Bewitched now.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely, like, but that, I mean, the support and the audience went absolutely crazy. You know, so we had a great experience then, but I just don't think a lot of our gigging is away. There's just not that market here to do the type of gigs and festivals that we do in the UK here. So it's, I don't know, it's just a music cultural difference, I think, possibly.
But then, and then what's astonishing is that we are still the country that gave the world Boyzone, Westlife, yourselves.
Yeah.
Like, we seem to be able to do it, get bands off the ground, but somehow we turn against them once they make it big.
Yeah, I know it is difficult. I don't know what that is. I think maybe in the moment, but maybe years later, it's not as bad. And it's hard to kind of tell, because when that experience is happening, and which it did in the late 90s for us, we weren't really here to feel it or see it, you know, for a long time afterwards. So I think, you know, after that, it was just, we kind of felt just individually like that it was fine. Idel and Keith and Lindsay, they live in the UK, and Idel would say, like, people go, oh my God, that song, that's great. And, you know, they have a really kind of kind, warm feeling towards it. And some people go, oh God, that's here. Maybe that song wrecked their heads, or I don't know. It's very 50-50, to be honest.
And do people come up to you in pubs and or on the street and want selfies and start singing?
Yeah,
riffs,
well, see,
of songs?
It's so funny. Even when I was in the band, I was kind of, people thought I was the manager. So I didn't get recognised that much, which is so handy. So I hear what Keith's saying. I mean, they were like they were huge, like, and they're very recognisable. So I can definitely go incognito and nobody would. But I think when I mention it, it's always like a good reaction, because people have that nostalgia, as you say, and those memories from years ago where they were, you know, from getting hair done. They're always like, oh my God, yeah, that song, and my man played it, and I did it in a talent show in school, and we all dressed up in denim. So I feel we get a lot of...
We were trying to say, is it double or triple denim, Sinead?
Oh, we've done it all, to be honest. Oh God.
Honestly, you did. You brought us great pleasure. That is that video in particular kind of has a feel of that era so strongly, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's still making its way through movies and everything. So it's you know, it's been amazing for us.
But anyway, you're never worried about somebody giving you a dig in a pub?
I'm never worried. No, I'd like someone to buy me a drink though.
Okay, well, listen, 51551 0818715815. If anyone wants to buy Sinead O'Carroll a drink, we all think she deserves one, if not four. Listen, Sinead, thank you so much for getting in touch. That's it's great to get your perspective and talk to you.
No worries.
I'm delighted to have had the chats.
And thank you so much. Take care.
Dennis Dorn, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, Dennis, you had your own moment in the sun.
Well, I hope I have another one. I hope, particularly when it's raining at the moment. But,
but you were involved in Eurovision, were you?
I was. I sang backing vocals in the Eurovision in 1991. Liam Riley's song, Lord of Mercy on Him. Could it be that I'm in love? Kim Jackson was the singer at the time.
That I'm in love?
Yeah, that was it.
And do you want to give us a blast of the backing vocals there?
I better not. I've been in the green room for a while. I'm only joking. I'm going to be appearing again. I'm going to be representing my country again in June at the European Blues Challenge, which is a prestigious event and has been going for the last 10 years. And this is the first time that Ireland will be have a representative, the Republic of Ireland will have a representative at that event, that concert. It's in Malmo in Sweden. And we haven't had any support for it. We're paying for it all ourselves. We're paying for our accommodation, our flights, everything. We have two albums that we released, financed it ourselves. And we tried to get a radio play, and apart from one or two small stations like Dublin City FM, we haven't been able to get any airplay, any interest, any none of the even the North Side News or the Dublin Gazette, whom I contacted and emailed.
Dennis, are you relating this in some way to what Keith Duffy was talking about?
Yeah, there's nobody interested. I mean, all right. Blues, I don't know, people might may or may not like blues, but we're songwriters and we perform, and we have our own little gig in Phibsborough, in Jim Clark's, he lets us use the back room, he's so kind to do that. We don't do a cover charge, we just collect from our fans, they support us, they're financing our trip, they have contributed.
But can I put to you, Dennis, what I put to James earlier? Like, aren't people entitled not to be a fan of yours? Aren't people entitled to not like your music? Is that not what the world is like?
Yeah, but my point is, whether or not people, like, radio stations play music anyway, but to not even get a little bit of exposure, particularly when, I've no problem about... That's not my point. My point is that there's no exposure. Like, we're going to represent our country. And our music, well, you can take it or leave it. That's everybody has their opinion. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, to not even get a modicum of radio play or a modicum
of interest.
Well,
you're on the biggest program in radio in the afternoon now, Dennis.
Absolutely. How can I deny that?
You've made the big breakthrough onto the national airwaves.
Look. We're getting, my point is, I'm not being in any way antagonistic or annoyed or anything like that, but it's very frustrating to go represent your country. I mean, if I had played soccer for my country, I'd be thrilled. But I sing, and to sing for my country is something that I really, really cherish and something that I'm delighted to do with my colleagues in the band.
What are you going to sing, Dennis?
We write all our own material, and we're going to sing one of our own songs and one other song, obscure cover from the 30s or 40s, and it's a blues number. And we're going to do one of our own songs, which we released from our first album. And, like, I mean, we've got some great response from people on Facebook and stuff like that. But dare we look to get a little bit of exposure from our, Casey, our national station? It's just impossible. Nobody's interested. And we've tried EPKs, we've submitted, people have emailed, and, you know. But,
yeah.
Let me
just ask, James, are you back on with us there, James?
I'm here, and I was listening to Sinead, and that there was something that you said there, Katie, and I'm just going to draw you back to it. You made the point when, and hello to your listener there, and I what's his first name?
Dennis Doran, yeah.
Yeah, just when we were chatting about the Keith Duffy situation, you're exactly right in the point that you made in relation to people have the choice of liking or not liking people's music. That's actually a reality, but that isn't necessarily of what the point really is. That's kind of like a sideline. People have the choice to feel and hear for what Dennis is saying in relation to airplay.
I'm sorry, James, that line is just no good. We're only hearing every fourth word from you there. We'll take a break and see what we can do.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're still trying to get James back on there. But Dennis, you have your chance now. What is the band's name again? You have a full, clear run now to get the publicity you've been craving.
Thank you so much. And I'll milk it too.
The band is called
Crazy Crow.
Crazy Crow.
Crazy Crow.
C-R-O-W. Crow. Crazy Crow.
And by the way, that name comes from a character who was a grave robber in the 1800s. And his name was George Hendrick. And our guitarist, lead guitarist's name is Jerry Hendrick. And Jerry
we decided George Hendrick, the grave robber, his nickname was Crazy Crow. So we said we'd call ourselves Crazy Crow. So there is history there and a little bit of attribution to Dublin, and because we're a band from Dublin.
And you have, as you said, you have a residency.
In Jim Clark's Sidsborough House in Sidsborough. At the moment, it's every Sunday afternoon from 7 to 9.30. And we'll probably be moving to Saturday nights for the summer months, obviously, because of the nice stretch in the evenings and Sundays where people like to be with their families and stuff like that on Sundays.
And Dennis, just going back to the main point of this, though,
yeah.
When I'm seeing your back history with the as a backing vocalist in the Eurovision, yeah. You know, Johnny Logan's name was mentioned there as well as somebody else who would have had a massive career abroad, but really, you know, would have struggled to fill venues in Ireland. Is there something just different in our taste in music in Ireland? Is that where a lot of this is coming from? That we just pop music?
I think with respect, one has to look at the demographic in relation to the age profile in Ireland. I mean, and I'm not being derogatory when I say this. My daughter works in London now, so a lot of young people would be gone out of the country anyway, and a lot of the older people would be more given towards traditional Irish music maybe, and then young people as well. I don't want to get drawn into, I mean, I love all kinds of music, and I know that, but what I'm saying is the nature of, say, what we're doing and playing original material and getting exposure for original material and getting exposure for, particularly, this is one of the main reasons I rang in, getting exposure for the country, for our country, that people will come here from all over Europe. We'll be meeting 23 other nations from all over Europe. There'll be agents from all over Europe attending that. And whether we win, lose or draw, we'll still have the opportunity not only to perform and to advertise our country and our live music and talking about our country to other nations and having that exposure. And then if we get to work in Europe, which would be fantastic for us,
okay,
to take our music around Europe. And that's the reason, one of the main reasons why we're delighted to go.
And when is that on again, Dennis?
It's on in Malmo in Sweden. It's on the 2nd, 3rd and 4th of June.
Okay.
The other problem that we had, and it's not a problem, but we'll get over it. You know, we're the only country in Europe that has to fly. I mean, UK can use the Channel Tunnel or the Port Tunnel.
Can just throw their gear in the back of a van and head off.
We get flights, so much so that it has restricted us to not being able to register for this competition on site, because you have to register when you arrive. They've facilitated us to register on the Saturday. So, I mean, we can't afford to stay there for 3 or 4 nights, so because we're financing it ourselves. And now, as I said, I want to put it on record that the only organisation that has helped us, or is going to help us, because they can't afford to give us the money until we come back, are IMRO.
Okay.
So IMRO were the only people who said they could give us some money. But
okay.
We looked.
Okay, Dennis.
Sorry, Katie, I just need to put this on record. We're not going to cap in hand to anybody. We're very happy to finance it ourselves, but only because we realise that we're just banging our heads against the wall trying to get people to promote. I mean,
okay.
I
don't want to cut across you, but just we've other people waiting on the line to get in.
I appreciate that.
And
sorry.
We appreciate your call, and very, very best of luck representing Ireland. We'll be keeping an eye out for you and see how you get on over in Malmo in Sweden. Don Harris, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, Don, you've been listening to our chats there.
Fascinated. And immediately I heard the very first point, I just thought, boy, applies to the speaking business as well, and people who are very good professional speakers in Ireland and very well known, and would be invited to go overseas and have written books and done all kinds of things. But when they might be asked to do an event at home in Ireland, a big conference or something of a corporate nature, suddenly there isn't a fee, and it's spoken in terms of, oh, well, you'll get great exposure and you'll get potential business from the people who are in the audience. It doesn't happen. For some reason, some of the greatest speakers we have still have to find recognition abroad. And more importantly, we're quite prepared to pay, as organisations and conference organisers, people to come in from further afield and pay their fee, no problem. It's like the grass is always greener elsewhere, but we don't recognise our own here.
And are you a public speaker yourself, Don?
I don't do as much speaking now, but I did. And I'm more doing some tour guiding now these days, to be honest, meeting lots of great people. But the thing is, this has been going on for years.
Just explain to people, though, because people kind of might be, you know, not very clear about what kind of a skill you're talking about here. So when you would have been, you know, professionally speaking, if I can put it like that, what kind of events would you have?
All right. Well, I mean, in my own case, it might have been just at events or conferences or a TEDx talk here or something else, because you don't expect to get paid for those kind of things. But you might be asked to speak at something. It doesn't matter if it's 400 or 600 in an audience. And the organizer might say, well, yes, you get great experience and exposure to the people, but no, we don't have a budget to pay you.
Are we talking about after dinner speakers, this kind of thing?
That kind of thing as well, but generally actually talking about what could be a mental health issue, it could be wellness, it could be motivation. It doesn't matter, whatever the topic is, he or she might be very, very skilled and very, very knowledgeable in their own field. But you'll find out that a UK speaker or perhaps somebody from the States or somebody else has charged a fee for coming in and talking to the same body of people, and it was paid with no difficulty. But an Irish speaker seems to have great difficulty in achieving the fee because we just don't recognise how good some of the people that we have are.
And do you think this is kind of tied to what we were originally talking about there, what Keith Duffy was saying about, you know, people insulting him, not appreciating them, begrudging them?
I think it's part of the Irishness that we're very familiar with each other in lots of ways, and it's one of our strengths that we can open conversations and be easy with conversations. I remember Tony O'Reilly, the great Tony O'Reilly, telling a story, must be 25 years ago now or more, when he was at the height of his positions with Heinz, president of Heinz, his great rugby career behind him, and other great business adventures. And he was at a dinner in the Shelburne Hotel, hosting a big dinner at the Shelburne Hotel, I think of Heinz executives or perhaps other people, it doesn't matter. And he had this big table of people, and he was at the top of the table, and the waiter and the other staff served everybody else. And they came around to him, and the waiter just said, "How are you, Tony?" And it kind of didn't, it wasn't correct at that moment, but it is symptomatic of how we sometimes act and react with our celebrities, if you like.
Yeah, but what, do you think the waiter should have said, "Hello, Sir Tony"?
I think in that occasions, he could have perhaps said, "No, not so, but hello, Mr. O'Reilly," or something that mightn't be, it was Tony O'Reilly who said, "I didn't feel very comfortable about it at that time because it was such a prestigious occasion." So maybe it was a training issue then. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with calling people by their first name. Just there are times, and I'm relating it slightly to the business of when you're well known at home, you don't get the same recognition.
But don't we have this idea here? You can't have notions. You're not allowed to have notions, and you'll be cut down to size. And that's often considered, you know, quite a charming thing and quite a, you know...
Correct. But isn't that what the point started off with?
Well,
with
no,
Brian,
the point started off because he was worried about getting a dig. that is a slightly...
Well, let's go back to Johnny Logan then. I think one of your speakers very eloquently talked about at the height of his success, he wasn't getting it here at all and couldn't get the same recognition. And I just think that certainly my point really was, I wanted to come back to the speaking side. It's very hard for speakers here, really good speakers, and I know some personal ones, I'm not going to mention names, but who command huge fees because they are so good.
What kind of fees are people getting paid for speaking here, Don, do you think?
Look, anything from 500 to 5 or 6,000, depending on what the size of the event. But it would be a considerable presentation then of maybe 2 or 3 hours of and time and all the expertise. And as we have always said in the business, it's not the 30 minutes that I'm here now. It's the 30 years beforehand that has brought us all together.
Indeed. Okay, Dan, thank you for that. I need to take a break here.
You're welcome.
51551. Thanks, Dan. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, I want to move on to a completely different issue. Jonathan Smith, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, Jonathan, you got in touch with us because of your brother, William.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us William's story?
Yes, well, William noticed an irritation in his throat a couple of years ago at the start of COVID, and with all the hoo-ha in the hospital, it was difficult to get appointments completed.
And yeah, this was at the early days of COVID.
Yes. And at the earlier part of last summer of last year, the tests on his neck started to gain momentum, and they noticed that, in fact, he had a tumour in front of his larynx. And they opted. Now, the hospital were brilliant. Vincent were brilliant. Luke's were brilliant. And I respect them greatly. They started treatment sometime in around September for 7 weeks to try and nullify this tumour. But it's been to no avail. And it didn't work.
So how is he now?
He's stable now. He's stable. And
but he's not talking to us because he has issues with his voice now?
Yes, he has a tracheostomy, and one is for speaking, and then he has the second one that cleans. But he can't talk at the moment, but he has a bucket list and he's stable. Like the doctor said, they called us in about a month ago, and it's just a bit emotional case for me.
I know.
We weren't expecting it.
So this is quite recent that you got the final word really on his prognosis.
Yeah, it's about a month ago, and they said that he would have. Well, for starters, like my son works, he's a nurse in the ICU in Vincent, and the professor who was dealing with my brothers is a colleague of his, and he asked my son, and I'm Will's next of kin, that we met in the conference room at 3 o'clock on Tuesday about a month ago, and we knew it was going to be bad news because, I mean, they're meeting in the conference room. They're not. If it's good news to tell, he can tell you anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
But we just didn't see the gravity of the news.
And are you going to be... Yeah, go on.
So they said he had two months to 10 months left, possibly, you know. He said a year, he's very, very, very lucky. And I felt it for the man delivering the news himself, because for my brother and him, you know, they were linked for that time. It was horrendous. I felt it, like I said, for him delivering it and for my brother seeing it. Well, he said about compiling a bit of a bucket list, things to do before he passes on, and we're trying to make them happen as best we can.
Now just explain to me, for how many of you are in the family, Jonathan?
So there are five boys in total. Will is the youngest, and I am the second oldest.
Right.
So, but I'd be possibly one of his closest brothers, if not the closest.
So he's a friend as well as your brother.
Oh, he's my best friend.
Yeah. So it's
This
is all very, very difficult, Jonathan, I know. But as you say, so what kind of, would he be a positive person anyway, William?
No, very, very much. Very, very much. And he'd be very outgoing, and he's a very funny lad, and he's very receptive of the situation and accepting of the situation that's happening at this moment, you know. Right. And he'd be a spiritual person. He sees, like we spoke about it, he said, I'm not afraid of dying. He said, I'm just moving to somewhere different, you know.
Yeah.
But he asked me to help him compile a bucket list, and I've tried to do it. Now, my wife rolled out the letter to Lifeline, thank goodness, because I'm not really in great shape to do anything. And in the list, we're making all the things happen. We're funding all the things happening. But in the bucket list, there's a trip to the US, and where we're having the difficulty. And the reason my wife contacted was because of the insurance issues.
Yeah,
just in relation to going to the US.
And just to explain, because I have your wife's letter in front of me here, the reason that William put this trip on his bucket list, it's not just to go to the US, it's for a very special reason. It's to see Billy Joel.
Yeah, that's right. In Madison Square Gardens, yeah.
Okay, so this is the trip of a lifetime, really. It's something literally a trip of a lifetime. It's one of the main things in his bucket list. And you can finance it as his family.
Very much.
Yeah, that's not the problem.
No.
It's travel insurance.
Travel insurance for someone who's terminally ill. It's not, Katie, a great conversation to have on air or with anyone. But who wants to talk about bringing a body back from somewhere? But that, unfortunately, is the reality.
So you're saying you basically have to get cover in case something happens while Williams is in the US?
Well, if possible. Now, I spoke to my son, and I said he's in ICU nurse in Vincent's, and he said the chances of something happening to him are remotely very, very slim. Because he's relatively well for somebody with terminal cancer. He's stable at this point, and he has this tracheostomy to breathe. So, and he looked up the barometric pressure about travelling in an aircraft and all of these things. We've exercised all the problematic situations. And, in fact, he doesn't see a problem happening. But, as we know, if a problem happens medically in the US, it's not like in Europe. You'd have to sell your house.
Oh yeah, because in Europe we all have the card we can have access to medical treatment anywhere we go. But yeah,
that's right.
In America, that is not how it works.
No, but I mean, a hospital per se can't do anything for my brother because they've exhausted all the medical routes. We're just looking for some type of travel insurance to bring him back if he did pass away over there. Now, there are repatriation groups. There's the Kevin Bell repatriation fund. But I would rather, if we could get insurance and pay for the insurance, and stand on our own two feet.
And have you approached all the insurance companies that provide travel insurance?
I won't name anybody, but my wife and I have spent countless afternoons ringing and talking to insurance people. They all come back with it. No, they won't touch someone who's terminally ill. They won't touch. So the reason, like she said, my wife wrote to the live line was the fact that with such a big listenership, hopefully maybe someone may come back with a situation they had in the past and how they went about solving it.
Can you see, Jonathan, why an insurance company might be reluctant to take the risk with William?
I suppose if I'm to look at this from a non-biased point of view, yes, I can. But as somebody who is in business, insurance companies are very quick to up premiums. You want cover for your insurance. You have step-back insurance on your insurance. Your public liability insurance for your business. We have house insurance for our house. We have a house in the country. We have insurance on that. But car insurance. Katie, I'm 59 years old. I've never claimed insurance in my life. But yet, when you look for maybe them to just step across, step outside the line a little, and maybe take a chance, they're not prepared to take that chance. And that's what disappointed me.
But people who have a terminal diagnosis must travel. Is it that they're all travelling without insurance? Is that what's happening, do you think?
I say within Europe you could probably take that chance, but I don't really think it would be an option to the US. Like I rang Make-A-Wish, I rang the Irish Cancer Society, and we've done massive fundraising for that stuff in the business we have. I'm not going to mention it on air. Mm-hmm. We've done massive funding for Cancer Society over the year. I rang the Irish Cancer Society 2 weeks ago. They put me onto a nurse's helpline.
my son is one of the highest qualified nurses in the country. I don't need to speak to the nurses, you know. It's just so disappointing, the lack of avenues open to people when, in fact, they need support more than ever.
My heart goes out to you, Jonathan. It's just such a difficult situation, you know, quite apart from this, trying to organise this. And you know, I know you put your energies into it, but just, you know, you're just a few weeks from getting that devastating news.
Well, I suppose, I mean, I have to exhaust every avenue, Katie, to try and make this come true. Now, I'm hoping it won't stop us travelling. I'm hoping it won't. But I do need to exhaust every avenue because my brother won't be here and I'll be left carrying this camp. And I need to try and put that to bed, you know. So, like I said, my wife sent a letter to your show in the hope that somebody out there might know someone who travelled in a similar situation, how they thought about getting insurance, where they got it. You know, like I contacted like the Make-A-Wish. Now they deal with children, but I just wanted a reference.
Yeah,
did
they have any ideas at all for you?
Nothing. I got on to Barrettstown again. They said they dealt with children. I was aware of that, but again, you're just looking for. Well, if you ring this broker here, he deals with us. You know, that's all I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a free anything. I don't need 5 cents from anybody. We just need someone to say, yes, this crowd will do it. Won't you? Oh, my brother has actually has a letter from Vincent saying that he is well enough to travel.
I was going to just ask you that. And in terms of like pain relief and, you know, how, you know, just physically able he would be for a long trip like that, you're confident he's fine to do that?
100%, because he's on morphine for pain relief. Professor Duffy and Vincent said, out of all of the things, he said, we can't guarantee anything, he said, with the human body, because we can do our best, he said. We don't know how certain bloods and things react under certain conditions, i.e. chemo, radiation, etc. But he said, the one thing I can guarantee you is that you'd be pain-free. And that, for me, was a great sense of relief, to be honest with you, you know.
Yeah, that's huge. And he's a massive fan of Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Is there anything else on that bucket list that you can be getting on with?
Well, we're going to Barcelona in 2 weeks, me and him, just for 3 days. So that would be a little precursor prior to going to the US. But that's only himself and myself. And then the week after that, there's 8 of us going to New York. 5 brothers, a good friend of mine, Philip, and then my 2 sons are coming. Well, like the one lad who's a nurse. Like I said, I mean, we're bringing a form of insurance, Katie, with us in the form of an intensive care nurse. But we just need some insurance thing to travel. It's just, hopefully it will be for peace of mind. Would I want to be utilised? No, I wouldn't. You know?
What happens, though, if you can't get the insurance? Will you go anyway?
I think so, because, like I said to you, I don't want to be left carrying that can for the rest of my days, you know?
Yeah, but it will be a worry, though, and an unnecessary worry if you could just get that sorted. Well, look, we'll put that out there for you, Jonathan. 51551 is our text number, 0818 715 815, 0818 715 815. If anyone out there, any broker, anybody has been through this, had to organise something similar, get in touch and we'll pass on any information at all we get to you, Jonathan. And hopefully you will be able to fulfil your brother's wish without that worry hanging over you.
Okay, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And moving on now, I want to go to Francesca. Francesca, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, Francesca, you have been through a fairly traumatic event. Tell me about your cat.
So it's bank holiday weekend, normal weekend for us. know, my daughter just started her job. I was around the house all day, sorting out my animals, feeding everything else. In the evening, I went to my parents' house as normal at around 7 o'clock for dinner, which we tend to do most evenings. We returned somewhere between 10:30 and 11, and when we returned, there was obviously something up. We've got four male cats, all neutered. They have free roam access to come and go from the house as they please, and three of them were acting a bit odd. And our largest one, in size, not age, was, we found him collapsed on our bathroom floor, struggling for breath, soaked in his own saliva, obviously very, very poorly, very ill. We had no idea what could have caused it. We contacted one of the local vets. We tried quite a few, but with being bank holiday weekend, coverage was a bit difficult on the Sunday evening there. We got hold of one of the vets and explained the situation. She said she would see us straight away. I'd already done a top-to-toe checkup of him, and his gums were super pale. His respiratory rate was off the chart.
Yeah, just to explain to people, Francesca, you can do this because this is what you do.
Yeah, I'm a registered veterinary nurse in emergency and critical care. Oh, the irony.
Yeah.
No vet or vet nurse ever wants to see their own pet on the table. Nobody wants to see any pet on the table, ideally, but certainly not your own. And all your training, it's there, but your mummy instincts kick in.
Yeah.
So, no, we got him over to the vets. While we were waiting for the vets, I was still checking him out, trying to keep him comfortable. We were only about 10 minutes away from them. We noticed something under the skin. It very, very solid, small, very man-made, obviously. I was thinking, sure, I can't have missed a lump on my own cat. It's very much something that shouldn't have been there. And when we moved him, my hand came away soaking wet, which, because it was like 11 o'clock at night, I thought was more saliva, and I looked down, and it was blood. And at that point, the two and two went together, and it became horrifically obvious to us that he'd been shot.
Shot with what kind of a...
We suspect with an air rifle pellet, an air rifle... type bullet. I'm actually waiting on the pellet itself to be returned from the vets who did the autopsy on him.
Autopsy. So he didn't make it then, Francesca?
No, he didn't. The vet, bless her, she did everything we could to make him comfortable. We did an X-ray. We established that what I thought might have been wrong with him, which was blood in the chest cavity, because it looked... from the entry and almost exit area that the pellet had gone through his chest. However, we found out later that it had actually gone in very, very slightly below his chest cavity, had gone through his liver, lacerating his liver and causing massive abdominal bleeding. So what we were looking for on the X-ray did not match what we found. The vet couldn't work out how he'd been so lucky. Maybe, you know, the pellet had... We were just looking for possibilities, even though we could see he was in a very grave condition.
Yeah.
We were looking for any way around it. He got pain relief, he got fluids for the shock, and those fluids seemed to give him a big boost over the hour that we were at the vet's. The pain relief certainly helped him a lot.
But ultimately, his liver was too damaged.
We know now that his liver was too damaged. The vet said that the choices were that we could leave him in the clinic overnight, but they're not a 24-hour service. And once he was in, he would be in there on his own, because she would be going away home again, because she was on call all night to farms and so on as well. Alternatively, we could bring him home since he seemed to have stabilised and keep him under observation at home. And if he deteriorated again, she'd come to us or we could go to her. So we opted to bring him home, put him in a crate, warm, cosy, continued his monitoring. I left him. I think I'd been away from him for maybe about an hour and something felt wrong. And when I went back, he just passed.
And you, this was Brat, was your cat's name?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
he was a brat.
And how long had you had him, Francesca?
He was approximately 5 years old. He came to us as the result of a foundling kitten. Whether his mum had abandoned him or whether somebody had dropped him off around the back of a Super Value in Killarney, Kerry. And he came to us as a foster kitten. Most fosters, you know, you bring them in, you buff them up and you get them all good and happy and healthy and you get them out. And he
stayed.
Was one of those that got his little furry feet under the table and stayed.
Hmm. And tell me, you're based in Killorglin now?
I am, yeah.
So have you any idea of how this happened, or where this happened, how this happened, why this happened?
Probably not more than, say, 50 to 100 yard radius of our house, because he was always incredibly close to home. He was at home at 7 o'clock that evening. So he wouldn't have gone far because they just had the dinner. And I'll be honest, he was never known for wandering too far from the house anyway. He was very food orientated. Why? We don't know. We really don't know. There's no obvious explanation. There's been no disharmony in the area. There's been no threats from people. Nobody's ever expressed to us a dislike of any of our animals. The whole community here seems to be in shock. Nobody could quite believe what happened. Nobody in the area either owns up to or has mentioned that they have an air rifle or any form of a firearm.
Do you think it could have been just an accident, somebody out messing with an air rifle, an air pistol?
It is a possibility. I don't think it could have been the case of, not recognising what he was, because he wasn't a small cat. He was a big boy. He was a big, sturdy lad. It was very obvious what he was. The thing about air pellets is that they're not designed to travel through flesh or bone. They're not meant to be able to carve their way through that. They're only ever meant to really be able to go through paper for target shooting. So they can travel a distance, but obviously they've still got to have the momentum through with them to carry through something like that. So my feeling is that it wasn't an accident.
That he would have to be close. It would have to have been very close to do the damage it did, is what you're saying.
Close enough.
Have you been to the guards, Francesca?
The guards are aware. I have made a formal statement. They've been round to the houses in our area. They've given me a pulse ID number. We've had no updates from them since, nothing whatsoever so far. So we just don't know. I've got the results of the necropsy from my vet, and I've got photos. I've asked my vet to hold on to the pellet for me for evidence, which I'll be collecting this week. That's it, really.
I'm looking at a picture of Brat here in front of me. He was a beautiful cat, wasn't he? He was that beautiful colouring.
He really was.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. Now, just looking at him here, he's a striking cat.
He was a stunner. He He was big, he was strong. He fought an amazing battle for us. Sorry.
Oh, it's just so upsetting. It's so upsetting. And so, I mean, the violence involved in it. That it wasn't just he was, you know, killed in a car accident or something like that, as can happen, but something that could have been deliberate, you think?
I don't really see how it wasn't deliberate. And it actually breaks my heart to think that somebody could do that. We're a very close community. Everybody around here knows everybody else. That weekend was the Rally of the Lakes weekend. So was it somebody new to the area? Was it somebody visiting the area? We don't know. It's pure speculation as to who it was. Without any information, without anybody coming forward with any information, we just don't know. We don't have any answers. Like you said, if he'd have been knocked by a car, you'd have said, well, you know, cats do stupid things and they get themselves into trouble. And if you're going to have a cat that potters around outside, a car accident is a risk. But you don't ever imagine your cat to be shot. It's not something that you could ever envisage happening to. I mean, my cats are, and my daughter, obviously, but they're my babies.
Yeah.
All of my pets have been rescued in some way, shape or form. And one of the main reasons we ended up keeping Brat was just because, apart from the fact he was incredibly handsome, to start with, he wasn't a particularly strong baby. So we said, well, we'll hold on to him. And it wasn't until lockdown a couple of years ago that we started ever letting them out. Until that point, they were all inside cats, continuously inside. They'd have access to a run outside if they wanted to, but majority of the time they had the full house to themselves and they could do whatever they wanted in the house. And it's only just the last couple of years that they've been allowed out and around, which is why probably he was always so close to home.
And I know, Francesca, you say if anybody has any idea, any information at all as to what happened, that you really want to know what has happened here.
We do. We want, you know, you can contact myself, you can contact the guards.
And contact us here, 51551. Yeah, 51551, 0818715815, joe@rt.ie, any of those contact details to the programme. If we hear anything at all, Francesca, we'll pass it on to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Francesca, thank you. Take care of yourself.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, we opened the show today talking about Keith Duffy and his complaints that he can't go out. In Dublin, he's afraid. He said he doesn't know whether he's going to get bought a pint or given a dig. I want to go to Lynn now. Lynn, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Lynn, where do you stand on this?
Well, I just heard a snippet, and I suppose I was coming at it from, I don't know, a similar-ish angle, but I was going on to the music business and all that, and you know, there is some begrudgery about that. But
I'm just realizing which Lynn you are. You're Lynn Hillary, former of Riverdance and Celtic Woman. Yeah, so you're familiar with the scene and that world.
Yeah, I wouldn't be well known. I could go out on the street. Like, in fact, I don't really work at all in this country at all. I sing at funerals. That's pretty much the only gigs that I do. So I have another kind of problem where I have had no success as a singer, which is fine. I sort of like, I'm very introverted. I like my own space. I like working kind of up by myself and writing. But there's a lot of sad truths going on in the music business in this country. And I think this is just a product of that. I mean, yes, there's a lot of begrudgery, but there's reasons for that. And
when you say there's a lot of begrudgery, what do you mean by that, Lynn?
Well, I think there's a lot of talent in this country. I think it's exploding with talent, but there is nowhere for that talent to go. There is no path for any musician or singer-songwriter in this country. It's very sad, but I'm so glad people have brought this up, because I always talk about this. I talk about it a bit on my social media and in the personal conversations I have with my colleagues, singer-songwriters. Their hearts are absolutely broken, and no one's saying it. They're making out like on social media, they're fine. Look at me, I've got a gig. I'm so happy. Look, I'm successful. The truth is 99% of singer-songwriters in this country are desperately heartbroken, because there is no path. There's nowhere for them to go. So then, obviously you're going to get the very famous ones. There will be begrudgery against those. A lot more complicated than that, though.
So what you're saying, Lynn, is you'd love a bit of begrudgery, because that would mean you had success.
Good question. No, I think I'd like a balance is what I'd like. I'd like there to be less sort of really famous people, and we all get a bit of a chance.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to see. But there is none of that. It's like really successful or nothing at all. And there's no balance. There's nothing in between, because there just is no chance. You don't even have a chance in this country.
And you're a singer, obviously. You've worked professionally as a singer. You write.
Yeah.
You're a songwriter as well.
Yep, bit of everything. You have to be.
And do you perform? Where do you perform?
I don't perform, because I don't know how. I've tried. I've tried to put on gigs. I've tried to reach out to agents. Who've tried all that, reaching out to radio stations. I've tried it all. We all have. There's no hope. There's no chance. There's nothing. So I just sing at funerals. I love it. It's lovely work. Funeral directors are very good to me. But I'm actually going to go traveling for a few months, because I just don't know what else to do. And I've decided to just walk away for a while, because there is no work for one like me. There's, sort of gaping crevices and cracks, and most of us are falling through those cracks. For the folk artists.
Is there not more?
There might be.
But is there not a route now that wouldn't have been there 10 years ago, like to become an Instagram star or a YouTube star, or, that you can go directly to fans and find fans online, no?
Yeah, good question. I mean, you have to be very good at business to do that, though. And that's the problem, is most of us are very sensitive. Most of us don't have these business skills. So most of us are forgotten. And like I said, I'm blue in the face saying the sensitive ones are falling away, because it's too hard. So the great artists, the great singers, the great songwriters, they don't even try, because it's too hard. They're too sensitive. They're too gentle. They don't have pointy elbows. So they just go, I can't, and I don't blame any single one of them. I've had conversations with my friends, and they're crying because their hearts are broken, because they're like, I wrote this beautiful song, and I'm going, it's a gorgeous song, but no one can hear it. And I think, I know, same here. So it is a really sad state of affairs. I have some solutions even. I even have solutions to this problem. Really simple ones.
Okay, we're nearly out of time, Lynn, so I won't be able to hear your solutions today. But best of luck. I hope to hear you or see you on a stage sometime soon. That's Lynn Hillary there, if you look out for her, if she's coming your way. Very quickly, Frank. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon. Hi. I've been unfortunate enough to see some of Boys Life's videos, and to be honest, his ego is much bigger than his voice.
Okay, Boys Life now is this new band that Keith Duffy and Brian McFadden have put together, and they're touring. They've got massive international tour.
Brian McFadden can sing, like, he's got a voice, but the ego on Keith Duffy is unbelievable. I think since he got his Hollywood teeth fitted, he's lost a run of himself big time.
Ah, Frank.
Well, he thinks he's Ed Sheeran, like, I mean, he's been jealous of poor Ronan for the last 20 years, and he's had a great lifestyle off the back of Ronan's voice.
But he's had his own career. He's an actor. He was on Coronation Street.
Yeah, but he only got that because of Boyzone. Now, he was great on The Box. Do you remember his big moment on RTE?
But are you not the definition of the Irish begrudger now, Frank?
Oh, well, no, there's begrudgery and there's honesty. And, poor Keith, he takes himself way too seriously. When they handed out Ego, he was at the top of the queue.
Would you be one of those ones giving out about Bono as well, though?
Oh, listen, I can't stand Bono. That's another day's work. Bono, oh my God. He's a pain in the whole of the world, Bono.
Frank, we're out of time. I wish I had more time to go through the list of Irish artists.
And maybe Sinead O'Connor while you're at it.
The list of Irish artists that you have issues with. We'll come back to you. But thanks for calling in with that. And that is, as I say, all we have time for today. Today's programme was produced by Fergus Sweeney. Elaine Conlon was a broadcast coordinator and Mark McGrath was on sound. Stand by for Ray D'Arcy up next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.